This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsNap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
And Real Ketones Keto Energy Shots.
Yeah. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Hey, coming up this hour, the good, the bad, and the dumb. You don't want to miss that. It's coming up in just a couple of minutes as we continue along here on a Wednesday. NBA bubble basketball from yesterday saw two upsets from the 8-1 in Orlando and Portland winning. Love the Trailblazers story. It has been fun, exciting. I think the Lakers can be in trouble. I don't think they are necessarily in trouble, but I think they can be with the way this is sort of designed. Houston, an impressive victory yesterday. 23 pointers. No Russell Westbrook. Didn't matter. They beat Oklahoma and beat Oklahoma City pretty handedly. And then the Miami Heat, getting a good night from Jimmy Butler, took care of Indiana. A team that had really saw the rise of TJ Warren during this bubble, took his opportunity to shine. But Jimmy Butler pulled in 28 and the Heat won. We got the Celtics and the Sixers playing tonight, and Gordon Hayward is out. He's going to miss 4 weeks with an ankle injury that he suffered in game one. And then you've got the Mavericks and the Clippers later tonight. Now, the story buzzing about that series is still about the referees who ejected Kristaps Porzingis and whether or not they kind of went a little overboard in their technical foul call. Now, if you remember the game from Monday night, Porzingis got a technical for sort of overreacting to a foul call after a clean block on Paul George. Then got his second technical when he came in to sort of help Luka Doncic, who was being wrapped by Marcus Morris and wrapped up, and there was a little bit of an altercation. And that second technical kicked him out of the game. Dallas was right in that game, and Doncic picked up his scoring once Porzingis left. But Dallas is trying to pull something off here, which is they've got good, obviously one of the best young talents in the game in Luka Doncic, but they got one of the more exciting combinations in Doncic and Porzingis. And it would be an upset if they pull this off against the Clippers, but they've got to win game two. I mean, look, this is not, again, we're not going back and forth from Dallas to LA, Staples Center, you know, back to Dallas. But I think from a level of you could look at game one and find 11 turnovers for Doncic and Porzingis out of the game and say, look, tables switch a little bit, you're in this game. But if Porzingis plays all the way through and Doncic doesn't turn the ball over and still has a good night and they lose, I think you're going to see them the confidence sort of wane down a little bit. All right, good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next as we continue on Wake Up Call.
At the SportsNap Radio Network, we wear Boomer Naturals masks. Order now at BoomerNaturals.com. Use promo code SportsMapRadio for 20% off. Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser!
Brought to you by Real Ketones Keto Energy Shots. Sustained energy without the sugar, jitters, or crash. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, it's the good, the bad, and the dumb on a Wednesday here on Sports Map Radio. Glad you could be with us. We give you the good, we give you the bad, and we give you the dumb for the given day. Because we want to feel good to start this, because we know we'll get the bad and the dumb, let's get the good of the day, Mr. Culver.
The good of the day, Drew Pearson.
Drew Pearson, yay!
Yes, he was selected as a senior finalist for the class of 2021 Hall of Fame.
Wonderful. That is so great. Good for him.
Deservingly.
Deservingly so, exactly.
I didn't realize this. I get, you know, I know we probably talked about it back, what, in December? Isn't that when they make the announcements?
I believe so, yeah.
Or a little bit sooner than that. I didn't realize, I must have missed his tweet or something, that he's the only member on the first team, all 70s team, not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I think we did talk about this. Yeah, because we remember going, like, really, he didn't get in?
Yeah.
Like, and all these Cowboys, former Cowboys, whether they played with him or not, were like screaming to the heavens that this was unacceptable.
Yep.
Right? I mean, they just were like, this is not, he deserves to be in here. What are you doing, committee? Get him in. And remember, this is the guy that, remember, he went out in Philadelphia at the draft
yes.
to pick for the Cowboys and completely trolled Philly fan. Like, maybe that's about why. The five-time Super Bowl champion.
Maybe there was a lot of people who are Eagle fans or former Eagles who are on the voting committee. They were like, oh, we still don't like him.
That's right.
I don't know.
Maybe so. I don't know. But it was one of the best intro, like one of the best, how do you put it? Representation of your team I think I've ever seen at the draft.
Yes, he was making it fun.
That's right. Completely fun.
That's where the draft, you know, we can say, you know, the beginning of the draft turning into an award show was
when
Pearson came out and like, hey, Philly fan, look at this.
Right. That's right.
Yeah, so, I mean, now all he needs to do is get 80% of the vote from a 48-member committee. How does he not get 100?
I know.
Yeah, well, I guess not, because Philly fan probably won't. The guy from Philly probably won't vote for him.
Exactly.
Just out of spite. And hopefully that's it. But, yeah, this should do it for him, I think.
Yep.
Hopefully he finally gets that knock on the door.
That's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
So, yeah. Another senior finalist who I'm still surprised who's not in it as well is Tom Flores.
Yeah, Tom Flores should have been. I thought he was in. I didn't know he wasn't.
Yeah. So he's now a finalist as well. So
two Super Bowl titles.
Hopefully both of those guys are able to get in. Hopefully it's not like, hey, it's one or the other type situation.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I hope they get in.
I would hate for it to be I don't want to say it or predict anything, but I would hate for it to be posthumously.
Yeah, me too. You're right. You know, absolutely.
Let them have their moment in the sun. All right, and hopefully we can have a Hall of Fame next year.
Yeah, I know. Hopefully we'll have a ceremony. Those are always fun and interesting. What's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day, I think I say this, I bring this up a lot, and you know, it's starting to concern me a little bit. But did you know that there was an asteroid the size of a Tesla that buzzed by the Earth this past weekend?
Why are we? Yeah, I feel like you're right. I feel like we do these asteroid really close stories a lot.
Not only that.
I didn't know that.
Not only that, this asteroid that was the size of a Tesla, I'm going to say that again, was the closest flyby to Earth on record. It was actually closer than the moon. It was closer than a lot of satellites.
All right. Say size of a Tesla, why is it different from any other car?
Well, you know, it's no. I'm just pointing out
because of
it was
SpaceX.
Tesla. Maybe
okay. I don't know.
I'm just. I mean, a decent sized sedan.
What would the damage have done? I think we've gone down this road before.
I think
Hollywood
that one,
tended to say to give us an idea.
Yeah, I think size of Tesla obviously would burn up a little bit coming into the atmosphere, but that could definitely rearrange a city.
Right, but it's not the end of the world.
It's not an end of the world. It's not a global killer.
Like, remember when Morgan Freeman was telling us about the asteroid and Deep Impact, and he was like, it's going to knock out the sun, and you're not going to grow food, and you're going to live in a cave.
I prefer to go Billy Bob Thornton in Armageddon.
Yeah, Billy Bob
like,
Thornton.
Yeah, global killer.
That was the size of Texas.
Yeah.
That they were trying to nuke in the sky.
Yep.
Whereas I think the one in Deep Impact was the size of Manhattan.
Right.
So it was still big. But a little piece got away from them in Deep Impact. Remember that?
And
it's how Taya Leone and Maximilian Schnell died on the beach. So,
well, there was the one, little piece that got broken up in Armageddon as well.
Yeah, killed Paris.
Destroyed Paris.
That's right.
Left the Eiffel Tower standing, so that was good.
Those two movies scared me to death.
Yeah, well, you know what, Tony? You're in luck because there is another one flying by
weekend. Because I don't like feeling happy and joyful I don't have a care in the world.
But it
I
is
like to
far
be
enough away.
Anxious.
It is far enough away that it shouldn't be too much of a concern. But you know what? NASA never says, hey, it's an exact science. We
what
don't know the
Neil deGrasse Tyson think about all this?
I guess, you know, but it does. It just feels like every single week, like, there's another big asteroid flying by.
Yeah.
And the part that gives me all the warm fuzzies, there's nothing we can do about it.
That's right. That's right. Are there too many people looking at the sky with social media today that if there was one that was on a direct impact that they would tell us? Or do you think the government is so good at its job, global government, that they could keep that a secret and just go, you know what? What they don't know won't hurt them, and let's just take care of ourselves and just let it go.
Remember, I mean, that was the thing in Armageddon. It's like, well, there's only 8 telescopes in the world, or there's like 9 telescopes in the world that can detect this asteroid.
Right,
we own
exactly.
8 of them.
That's right. We own 8 of them. That's what I keep wondering is, are there just too many people that observe the sky that would go, hey, look, there's an asteroid coming. I'm telling you, it's coming. Or would we not even know? One day would just be like, you know what? And then, you know, they just didn't want to tell us. But yeah, those movies were, whenever they're still on, I watch them with a still an eerie feeling. Deep Impact to me was the most realistic.
Yeah.
Like Deep Impact.
What, you don't believe that we should send up a bunch of drillers?
Yeah, a bunch of roughneck drillers up there to put in the nuclear bomb. But I remember watching Deep Impact going, I think this is how it would go down if there really was an asteroid coming, right? There would be a cover up. There would be caves being built.
Yeah.
There would be news reporters giving detail, telling you to stay home, quarantine. Here comes the National Guard.
I bet you the caves are already built.
Yeah, exactly.
In the limestone mountains of Missouri.
You know
whatever
what else
it was.
Is being built? Those ships in 2012.
Yes. in Wuhan.
Those ships are being built. I'm telling right now.
That's the government conspiracy, folks.
Billionaires have already booked passage.
COVID-19 was to minimize the population so we can fit more people on those ships.
That's crazy. Hollywood's awesome. All right. What's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is, remember that whole altercation with Masai Ujiri after the Raptors won the NBA championship?
Yes.
Well, the sheriff claimed that Masai Ujiri was the aggressor.
Yes, he did.
And
he did.
Is suing Masai Ujiri for loss of work. What were some of the other things? Which is, they're all kind of laughable now. That he had great mental, emotional, psychological, physical, and nervous pain and suffering.
Right.
Well,
this was a San Francisco police officer, right?
Yeah, Alameda County Sheriff
right.
or something like that. Who, by the way, is making about $252,000 a year.
Really?
Yeah, not too
they make that
shabby.
Kind of money?
Well, I mean, cost of living.
Well, it's a very, very expensive place to live. So yeah, that's true.
But his body cam footage was released.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Not such a good look for this one Alameda County sheriff.
I thought with all of the cameras, body cam, cell phone cam, just natural
they
cameras
had all
around.
That. They just hadn't released it. Now they've released it to the public, and you can clearly see Masai Ujiri fiddling, trying to get his badge out. It was caught in his tie. And this cop telling him to back the you-know-what off and shoving him.
Well, there goes his case.
Masai Ujiri does get one shove in. Not an impressive shove at all, I would say. But the sheriff, you know, shoved him twice and was using many expletives. And in fact, there's one video where you can kind of – it's from the arena – looking down, and you know, whoever did it, you know, circles who these people. It just looks like this guy is like looking at him the entire time. It's bizarre. I mean, I can't tell if he's looking at him the entire, but it looks like he's just staring at him the entire time. It's like, I'm gonna do something right now because that's when the Raptors won.
That's right. That's right.
So yeah, not a good look for his lawsuit.
It's
at
it's
all.
Too bad. Here's the thing. And I, you know, I hate to sound say it like this, but this sounds like something grown men could have just figured out without having to, you know what I mean? Like
take them both into a room and say, hey, can you shake hands and apologize?
Exactly. Like Masai Ujiri could be like, yeah, you know what, dude, I get it. I didn't have my credential ready and I'm buying, you know, you're supposed to have your credential ready and available at every single moment's notice when you cover an event. Now, Masai Ujiri is the president of the Raptors, and so he should be able to go where he wants. But he's in the opponent arena. You know, the Raptors won the championship. He's trying to get on the floor. You're a security guard trying to prevent the chaos that's ensuing, because I'm sure there's other people that are trying to get through and you're trying to hold them back. You lose your temper. You become an aggressor. Ujiri is trying to reach for his credential. Yeah, there was a problem, but taking it to court and all of that and then lying about it, when two grown men could have sat down and go, you know, dude, I was overly stressed. I'm really sorry. And I didn't mean it. And I didn't trust everybody. I was in an untrusting mood at the time. So you telling me you had access and I just didn't believe it. And Ujiri going, yeah, I should have had my credential out to show it because that's what you're supposed to do. I mean, listen, I've been in plenty of games where like I'm walking down and my, I have a jacket and the credentials hidden by my jacket, and I've gotten security guy go credential, and I'm like, oh yeah, sorry, and I have to pull it outside the jacket. That's happened to me a number of times. You've got to have it ready. Your jury knows that. He probably just lost track of it. We all do it.
No, I mean, it was around his neck. I mean, you could see it around
his shirt, right?
But it was. I think it was tucked into his shirt or it was tucked into his jacket. I mean, he had a jacket on. He had a tie on.
Yeah, jacket. It was tucked into his jacket.
But it was wrapped up. And you know, you and I both know. It's like, hey, sometimes you have to fiddle with those things to get out because,
of course.
Or flip it around because the wrong side is facing forward.
Yeah.
You know,
especially wearing a suit jacket. I used to wear suit jackets, and they just get trapped in the thing, and you don't care.
Yeah, I mean,
you don't think about it.
It happens.
But again, the moment the officer files a lawsuit, he should have been realizing some video is going to come out that's not going to support my claim.
Somebody should have warned him and said, listen, be honest. Who was the aggressor?
Right.
Because, I mean, if you're his lawyer, are you sitting there looking right now going, oh, God, man.
He had body cam on, and he didn't realize that he was...
Yeah. I mean, and to this point, any president of a sports team could walk through these doors right now. I don't think I would recognize who
absolutely.
He is.
No, absolutely. No, and that's another thing. When they said he should have known. No, you don't know.
You don't know who these guys are.
You can't know every single important person of everything. You just don't.
There's some because they're also the owner. Like, I think, well, I don't know if Jerry Jones is still president, but I know at one point Jerry Jones was the president of the Cowboys. I mean, he made he probably still makes all the decisions, let's be honest. But if he walks in the door, I think I'd recognize him.
Sure, exactly.
But Masai Ujiri, I mean, you know, just looks like another wealthy individual that walks through these halls sometimes.
If you're at home, yes. But if you're on the road, you expect a part-time security guard to know who the executives are for the Raptors? I don't care what times you play them. Like
that's the thing.
It's not just going to be automatic.
It's the Raptors. How many times do they visit Golden State?
Maybe hardly ever.
Once, twice a year.
Right.
That's it.
Right. So.
And does Masai Ujiri come to all those games? No.
Right. No.
So. No. He's not going to travel all the time.
Absolutely. All right. That's the good, the bad, and the dumb for your Wednesday. As we continue along with Sports Map Radio here on Wake Up Call, Lee Ellis will join us from The Athletic. We'll talk about NBA playoffs. That's all coming up this hour as we continue along on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Superstart batteries exclusively at O'Reilly Auto Parts, designed to meet the electrical demands of today's vehicles. Get dependable power and performance from a Superstart battery for your car, truck, motorcycle, lawnmower, and more. Visit O'Reilly Auto Parts today, and the professional parts people help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. I want to talk a little bit about grandparents in this segment because there are a couple of instances where prominent athletes, prominent sports figures who are now grandparents have really gone nuts over their accomplishments of their grandchildren. Now, I'm not a grandparent and I'm not in any rush to be one, but I'm wondering if there is a different way you kind of like root for your grandkids than maybe you're even your own kids. I don't know because Mario Andretti was on the pole for the Indianapolis 500 back in 1987, right? And there has not been an Andretti, the most prominent racing name, you know, that we have in open wheel in American sports. There's not been an Andretti on the pole at the Indianapolis 500 until this year when his grandson Marco made it to the pole position last weekend. And Mario Andretti was like staying in his house watching it on TV, said he jumped and hit the ceiling, how excited he was for his grandkid to be on the pole. Now, his son Michael never was on the pole. John Andretti was never on the pole. And now Marco is on the pole for Sunday's race, first time since 87. Carl Yastrzemski has a grandson that plays for San Francisco, Mike Yastrzemski. There was a report the other day that Mike Yastrzemski hit a game-winning home run for the Giants when they were on the West Coast. And somebody contacted Carl in New England, and he said he stayed up all night to watch his grandson play and was excited his grandson hit this home run. Jack Nicklaus, do you remember a couple of years ago when Jack Nicklaus's grandkid made a hole-in-one at the par 3 contest at Augusta? And Nicklaus said it was the best thing that has ever happened to him at Augusta National. He's won 6 Masters, including one at 46 with his son on the bag. And his grandson making a hole-in-one in a par three contest was the best thing ever at that golf course. Does something just take over in that when you become a grandparent where you just go, oh, yeah, no, this is the great, this is the best. Like, don't, like, my grandkids are the best. Because I watched, those are three pretty prominent athletes going the extra mile, going the extra level of excitement for their grandchildren.
Maybe it's,
is it different with your kids?
Yeah, maybe you're a little bit harder on your kids and you expect more
maybe
out of your
so.
Kids.
Maybe
and then
that's
when it's your
it.
Grandkids, you can just finally just love them.
You're on for the ride, right? Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Win or lose, it doesn't matter.
That might be it. Because Mario was probably really in Michael's career and was probably like, no, you're doing this wrong. No, you're doing this wrong. Come on, man. You got to do this with the car. You got to do this with the turn. You got to do this with the angle. You got to do this with the setup and all that. And with his grandson, he's probably like more hands off, just giving kind of casual advice and then just excited that he's doing it because he's not as emotionally invested as when Michael was growing up. Or maybe that was the way with Jack, where his kids, like, I remember Gary Nicholas was on the cover of Sports Illustrated in the 80s as a really good, young, prominent golfer with the caption, the next Nicholas, and he never did anything. But watching your grandkid make a hole-in-one at Augusta National, yeah, I guess that would be fantastic. I don't know if it's the greatest
great.
Thing that ever happened.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Like, that's my favorite line, I think, in
like
sports
Jackie
ever.
Carried the bag for the final round 65 and 86. Your son Jackie was
count.
On the bag, and he was guiding you. He was telling you, Pop, you stay positive, Pop. We're going to do it. Don't worry about this bogey. We're going to make eagle on the next hole. Don't worry, Pop. You got the right club. He was doing all of that all the way to the very end. But grandchild holding one on a par three is I just find it fascinating. I thought it was interesting. I came up with three examples in recent memory of athletes who are now grandpas who are just thrilled at the results of their grandchildren.
Well, I guess, you know, we'll have to figure, you know what we'll have to wait for? We'll have to see how Tiger reacts. Because
that's true.
Charlie Woods looks like he's off to a good golf career.
Yep.
But will it be Charlie's kid that Tiger gushes over?
That's true. Will Charlie's kid is Tiger just, or Sam's kid. I think he's got another child.
Mark
Sam.
This down. When we're doing this show, you know, 50 years from now,
yeah,
and that happens, we can go back and play this tape.
That's right. Play this tape. Right. Exactly. That's fantastic. It's so wonderful. So, the Andretti thing came up over the weekend because I kind of follow
racing. I didn't even think about
it. I didn't even know that.
Didn't even think about the fact that, yeah, I mean.
Who are more prominent open-wheeled racers? There's the Unsers. But the Andretti's, I mean.
That's it, right?
Mario raced Formula One. He was an American Formula One driver.
What about the Ray Halls?
Ray Halls, yeah, that's another one. That's another
good
one.
Family.
Bobby Ray Hall, Graham Ray Hall. There's another one. But
Foyt?
You know, Foyt, there's another one, yeah. But the
Andretti. You just got to be in a family of racing.
Yeah.
You can't break into it anymore.
So weird. Remember, now this is going to date me, so forgive me. Everything I say dates me, so what do I care? But do you remember when the Indianapolis 500, like, you could find people that didn't know anything about racing, but it was so prominent that they knew those names? Now, I don't know who's running in it. Like, I barely have any idea.
Oh, I have no clue.
The field is it. But you could go to, like, anybody. You could go to find somebody in the early 80s, mid-80s, and just be like, do you follow auto racing? Like, nah. Can you name me some people that are in the Indy 500? Andretti, Foyt, Unser. Like, those were just household names.
Well, I mean, it's kind of funny.
They were just in there. They were there all the time.
Because if you asked me during that time, this is what I find funny. If you asked me during that time, I couldn't name you one NASCAR driver outside of maybe Richard Petty.
Right, sure.
I don't know anybody in NASCAR.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, but we can ramble off a whole bunch for Indy 500, or IndyCar racing. It was ridiculous.
That's the level you want to get to when you're an athlete, when you transition from just the people who love you and love your sport and love your team or whatever it is you do. When you transition and you become a household name and you become someone like, I don't even follow that sport, but I know who he is. Like, I know, you know, he could be in a movie playing a race car driver and it would make sense because I know that name and I know that image. But yeah, and Andretti on the pole at the 500. And Mario the Grandpa couldn't be happier at his home in Pennsylvania. All right, we'll talk basketball with Lee Ellis from The Athletic on the first games of these playoffs as we continue along on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go out to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Lee Ellis joining us from The Athletic to talk NBA playoffs and especially the losses by both Milwaukee and Los Angeles. How are you, Lee?
Very well, thanks for having me.
Okay, listen, I don't want to overreact like some people tend to do in the sports world, but in terms of what Milwaukee and the Lakers, how they performed, given the nature of the bubble and no home court advantage to feed off of later in the series, is there a little bit of trouble between with those teams?
I wouldn't think so with Milwaukee. I think they just came out and they were flat, and I think they underestimated their opponent, and the Orlando Magic just sort of gave them the old punch in the mouth, and Milwaukee didn't respond. The Bucks, their bubble experience hadn't been all that impressive, and I think they thought they were just going to flip the switch, and I think the Magic came somewhat ready for that because they just came prepared, and they you know, the thing about the Magic is they don't have that one superstar player, but they have a lot of very good role players, and they all came yesterday. But as far as the Lakers are concerned, I mean, Lillard's just continuing his red hot streak from the bubble experience that just got the Blazers into this into the playoffs in the first place. So sometimes when you play a hot team, basically what happened was to the Lakers last night, Lillard just did what he's been doing, you know, in that fourth quarter when they were down six, and then all of a sudden he just started hitting those bombs from everywhere. And the Lakers themselves, who also hadn't had a great bubble experience, but I think the reason the Lakers didn't have a great bubble experience is they didn't have a ton to play for like Milwaukee, and they were sort of just shaking off a bit of the rust. So I wouldn't be too concerned. I still think the Lakers win that series too, but certainly it was a different way that they lost compared to the Bucks. The Bucks never really sort of got the lead and never really got going, whereas for the Lakers they had the lead and just Dame time caught up with them in that fourth quarter.
Let's talk about Portland, because this was a team, and we've kind of discussed it. They were a team that was questioning whether they should even go and whether it was worth it, but then took advantage of it. We know about Damian Lillard, but there's another level here that he seems to be on. What do you make of how Portland got to this opportunity and have taken advantage of this opportunity?
Well, I mean, again, it comes down to Lillard and his will to win. You know, we've seen him several times kind of be overlooked and underestimated, and he kind of thrives in that environment, because if you go back even just to last year against the Thunder, even though the Blazers had home court advantage in that series, I think most people picked the Thunder to win simply because they had a deeper roster, and Lillard sort of took that on board and went out, and of course we saw what he did. And now coming into the bubble, he was someone who was hesitant because he didn't want it to be a sort of gimmick where you turn up and you've got no chance of making it, and instead he goes out there and of course puts his team into that incredible position. You know, the fact, I think they were only like a 6% chance of making the playoffs when they went down there, but instead he goes down there, puts his team into that playing game, which was awesome, by the way, yes, and gets the win, and shows that it wasn't just a sort of token performance. Like, he's now going on. He fully believes in himself, which is understandable, and his team to sort of go further than just this first round.
How concerned are you with the Lakers and their inability to shoot from the distance? Their three-point shooting is not very good, and this seems to be a three-point shooting time in the bubble.
Yeah, it's really weird because they shot bad in their bubble games, and it did carry over there to game one. And I think that's something that I think Frank Vogel is really going to focus on, because that is what makes LeBron really thrive. When he can come down, you know, we know when he comes downhill and he can hit those corners, shooters in the corner, and they can knock down those three. If they're not doing that, then teams don't have to spread the floor defensively. They can sort of focus a little bit more on LeBron and Anthony Davis and try to make things a little more congested for them. So I think it will come, because shooting is one of those things like that. You know, guys get hot and sometimes they go cold. And Danny Green is a great example. If you go back to the finals, 2012, I think it was, where he had, you know, 28 threes in those first five games and then he couldn't hit in the last two games. So it's certainly something that comes comes and goes, but the Lakers have still got time to figure it out. So I wouldn't be overly concerned because of what we saw from them throughout the regular season. But certainly Frank Vogel's going to want to see them turn it up a notch in these next couple of games.
Boston's got the Sixers again in Game 2 today. Gordon Hayward out for 4 weeks. How does that affect the Celtics?
That's a big blow. Gordon Hayward has been very, very good for them, but he doesn't get the same sort of attention as Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and even Kemba Walker. And he's that steadying hand. Defensively, he's very good. Offensively, he can be a spot-up shooter if they need him, or he can create for himself. And the fact that he's gone for 4 weeks means this is not one of those injuries that he could come back later in the series. He's definitely out for the rest of this series and probably longer. I think the Celtics still have too much depth, especially when you know that Ben Simmons isn't there for the Sixers. But I think now Philadelphia at least has a shot in this series. And I think Joel Embiid, so much of it falls on his shoulders to just go inside and play that bully ball, almost Shaq-like, against that smaller front line that Boston has. Boston's a very good defensive team collectively, but they don't have that one guy. Like Daniel Tice is not really big enough or strong enough to stop Embiid. So I can see Joel Embiid trying to feast inside and, you know, get sort of 30s and 40s in that series. And if he can do that and stay on the floor, stay out of foul trouble, Sixers are a chance. I still think ultimately the Celtics get out of this, but I think it probably goes 6 or 7 games now.
Lee Ellis joining us as we talk NBA from The Athletic. Again, one game does not a series make, but that Dallas Clippers game with Porzingis getting ejected, Doncic scoring 42 but 11 turnovers, Clippers still trying to figure out some stuff. How do you look at that series?
Yeah, that's a really interesting one, because the first couple of minutes of that game, the Clippers were up, you know, I think it was like 20-2, and you thought, right, Wow, this is, you know, this is exactly what we thought when playoff time comes. You know, teams sort of flex their muscles a little bit more, but then Doncic just dragged his team back in, and that ridiculous ejection of Kristaps Porzingis. I mean, you don't want to say that something like that affected or cost the game for Dallas, because they were still kind of in it. But, I mean, you throw a guy out for virtually nothing,
yeah,
and, you know, you just can't help but just feel that, like, that was such a poor decision by the referees. And I hope that, you know, first day of the playoffs, first game, everyone's a bit emotional, everyone's a bit hyped up. The referees need to also maintain their composure a little bit more. And you know, that second technical foul, you know, they went and reviewed it, and they still came back and said double tech fouls. I mean, under those circumstances, you would think the referees would maybe say to each other, listen, are we going to throw this guy out with 9 minutes to go in the third quarter? I mean, it just doesn't seem to be the wisest decision. So I think the Mavericks are going to come out with a bit of a chip on their shoulder and feel that they, you know, got screwed in that first game. And you know, obviously come out and try to win game two. But I certainly would be a little bit concerned about the Clippers' defense, because that's where they sort of hung their hat this season. And the Mavericks have got the best offense, and it's sometimes, you know, better offense beats a good defense. But you know, Luka Doncic, you know, for a guy at 21 years old doing what he's doing is just simply unbelievable. Still, I mean, he never gets fazed. You mentioned the turnovers; no question that he had a lot of pressure on him there. But that still doesn't affect other parts of his game, which is what I think is important. That he will still play hard. He'll still be you know, putting pressure on the defense to get those baskets, even if he's racking up those turnovers.
Let's stay in Texas with the Houston Rockets. A lot of people liked Houston going into this, and then, you know, the regular season wrapped up on a 3-game losing skid. But flexed muscles again without Russell Westbrook. This small ball lineup that they're going to use, is it good long term for this, for the playoffs?
Well, that's the question that you know, if they win a series, it's like, yep, it worked. If they lose a series, they're like, wow, that was crazy. It was never going to work in the first place. But yes, they were the team that came out and they looked ready rather than OKC. OKC, I thought, were actually very ordinary yesterday. Their offense, yeah, was just stagnant. There was no ball movement at all. Whereas Houston, and when James Harden is in that flow like he is yesterday, where he's hitting threes, and those other guys, his support cast, are hitting threes. If everyone on the Rockets is hitting threes, then they are a legit team in the Western Conference. But of course, we know that that's their poison as well. We've seen the Rockets in the playoffs go ice cold from downtown. So, you know, when those threes are raining in, they look great, and it looks like Daryl Morey is a genius there. But when they go cold, you think, like, well, you know, what were they thinking? How can they just play small ball the entire time? But, you know, when PJ Tucker's hitting them, I thought Robert Covington was good for them. He didn't shoot all that well yesterday, but, you know, defensively and playing that role of their sort of undersized big for them, I thought was very, very good. So, but the thing is, again, we've seen this from the Rockets before, where they look really good sometimes, and then all of a sudden it's like when they start missing, you think they don't have a plan B, and that can cost them. So I expect the Thunder to come out a little bit better offensively in their second game there, because, again, all you have to do with Houston is move that ball around and you're going to get open shots yourself. And I think they'll focus a little bit more defensively as well on, you know, it's okay if James Harden gets 40 points if no one else is hitting threes. But if other guys are hitting threes and James has a big, you know, 30, 40-point game, then it's tough to beat the Rockets.
Milwaukee-Toronto, the gap between those two teams, not necessarily what we saw from the Bucks in Game 1, but what about the Raptors? How close are they to where Milwaukee is?
Well, that's a great question, because I think coming into the bubble, like the season up until the suspension, the Raptors looked good at times, but they had so many injuries. Everyone on that team had missed a couple of weeks. Now, most teams have players, you know, get injured, so that's not an excuse. But they now had used that 4 or 5 months to get themselves fresh and get themselves ready. And I think you've seen that in the bubble as well, that they defensively looked locked in. Everyone looked sharp. Everyone had sort of gotten over their injuries. And I think at a full strength Raptors lineup, I don't think there's a big gap between them and Milwaukee at all. I think it's a lot closer than people think. I mean, most people kind of assume the Bucks are going to the finals this year, but I think a fully healthy Raptors team with everyone on their bench contributing is going to be a real tough out for Milwaukee, because oddly, you know, it's probably gone under the radar a bit here. Defensively, with Kawhi Leonard last year, we know that they're a great team to look at. Okay, so the eye test tells us they're a better team, but statistically, they are actually a better team, or they were a better team this year. They had a better defensive rating without Kawhi Leonard. So they probably improved as a unit defensively, even though they lost the best individual defender. So I think that's, that really does show just how good Nick Nurse is at communicating his defensive goals there to get everyone to buy in. And you see it. The Raptors, they rotate well, they close out on shooters, and they get all the rebounds. So, you know, they certainly have improved as a unit defensively, even though they don't have that one guy who, like Kawhi Leonard, who swung that series last year, the Eastern Conference Finals, when Nick Nurse put him onto Giannis and the Raptors were down 0-2 and they came back and won it in six.
Lee, great stuff. Really appreciate your work at The Athletic and coming on to get us a little bit of action on Game 1 of the playoffs, my friend. Thank you.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Quote, buy, and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at Progressive.com. Speaking of the NBA, speaking of baseball, speaking of football that's upcoming, want to get you in with BetUS.com. They are the best. Why? Because of the pioneer in online betting, and with more than 25 years in the biz, you need a sports book with integrity and longevity, and you also need to know you're going to get paid. So call them today at 1-800-MY-BET-US. That's 1-800-MY-BET-US. They'll walk you through getting started. Nobody in the industry gives bigger bonuses than BetUS, and now, if you mention Sports Map Radio, you can get up to 150% on bonuses on your first deposit. Nobody beats that. Again, 25 years in the biz, best bonuses. BetUS should be your sports book. Join today, 1-800-MY-BET-US, or go to BetUS.com. Remember, mention Sports Map Radio to get your bonus. So we continue at Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, before we get to these soothing sounds of Lee Ellis from The Athletic, let me remind you, Boomer Naturals have three-layer comfortable and highly breathable masks, and they come in sizes for adults, teens, and children. In stock now, they're ready to ship to you. They've got the Nano Silver technology woven into the fabric. Nano Silver can block those tiny drops and particles from getting to the nose, mouth. We want that best protection, and you're going to get it with Boomer Naturals. Plus, they're breathable, which is fantastic for a guy like me that, man, I have a hard time breathing and walking. So if I'm wearing a mask, I better make sure it's breathable, and Boomer Naturals does the job. Order now at BoomerNaturals.com. Use promo code Tony, save 20%. That's code Tony at BoomerNaturals.com. These are really, really comfortable. Get free shipping and handling when you spend at least $50 online at BoomerNaturals.com. And another great thing, they donate one face covering for every order to nonprofits and charities, helping tens of thousands of Americans in need. All right, so Ron, first thing Ron says to me during the break goes, everything just sounds better with an accent. Was not Lee Ellis soothing with that Australian tone
yes.
to NBA conversation?
You know, and you know the other thing I was really enjoying from that?
Right.
It truly shows how international basketball is.
True. Very true.
Because this guy knows way more than you and I.
A lot of stuff. A lot of info.
I mean, you're throwing this and you're throwing that, and he has perfect analysis for all of it. And you're like, oh, my God.
Man, he sounded great. I love that Australian accent. I was going to ask him how Vegemite tastes. I was
He wants to come on again. He enjoys it. So next time he comes on, we got to come up with more Aussie questions.
I should ask him, have you ever swam with a great white?
Yeah. Do you have a kangaroo just hanging out in your apartment?
Exactly. Do you drink Foster's lager for breakfast?
Well, no. Let's not go that far.
Oh, come on. Why not?
Well, maybe Foster's in your Cheerios.
Wasn't that an Australian for beer commercial? Remember that?
Yes.
Foster's lager. It's Australian for beer.
But as we all know, Australians do not drink Foster's.
They don't?
No.
I didn't know that.
No.
You say that as if that's common knowledge.
That is common knowledge.
Know
everyone knows that.
Does everybody know that?
Foster's, I believe, is made by Anheuser-Busch.
Oh, stop. Really?
I'm being serious.
That's bumming me out. Why don't you just say, Guinness is made in Montana?
It is.
I don't know about that drink one. It.
I think the Irish do drink Guinness. Guinness is a
different
thing.
If you go into an Irish bar in Dublin and ask for a Guinness, they'll go, whoa, what do you think you are, Bozeman? There's no Guinness here. Why don't you go back to Helena? Right? Is that what we're doing? I didn't know that Foster's wasn't a staple of the Sydney, Melbourne crowd.
It's not. I don't even know what popular Australian beer is.
That is good to know. But they do have Vegemite.
They do.
Put it on toast.
Isn't that like meat paste?
That is.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is, but it's in that song, Vegemite Sandwich. So
yeah, Foster's is made by Anheuser-Busch.
Wow, you're the best. See, I didn't know that. That's great. That's what I learned today. If we did a segment on what I learned today, that's what I learned today. Of all the things we talked about in the NBA that Lee Ellis gave us, the best information I have is Foster's is not an Australian beer.
All you had to do, I just had to go to Wikipedia. Here's the sentence. Foster's is not as popular and relatively rare in Australia.
That's awesome. That is fantastic.
But it is Australian for beer, mate.
That's right. You know what else is awesome? Jake Asman Show, and it's coming up next, Sports Map Radio.